Oh, the other thing, we are explicit. You don't have to hold back like swearing or anything like that. No,
Don't
we're
hold back.
anything you say, Ken, will be used against you on the recording.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that votes you out to not walk for a long period of time. It's not my best. I'm your host, Stephen Levine, and my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, how you doing?
It's early.
It is early. And our special guest, Ethan. Ethan, good to have you on the show, finally.
I'm happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, that is Ethan, winner of Survivor Africa, who's joined us for this episode.
Don't say that, man. Don't say that. Don't put that on me.
Yeah, so you have a lot to live up to, and yeah, you have a lot of Survivor background and knowledge, right?
Nah, this episode was the very first episode I've ever watched. I got, for the longest time, when people would talk about Survivor and Lost, I would think that they were talking about the same thing, just different seasons.
I get it.
I understand it. We're doing the good Jeff's work by shoving this on all of our friends. Welcome to Survivor. Get in.
Yeah, of our now 18 guests, or I guess there's some duplicates in there from returnee seasons, I think only like what, three have seen Survivor before we went, hey, you want to come do this podcast?
That is a choice. And one, I'm excited for you to be here because this is such a different dynamic to what our voices are. People have told us, hey, your voices kind of sound similar, which I very
That's
much
insane
I
to
disagree
me.
With, but we're in similar registers. Ethan, absolutely no questions who's talking when Ethan talks.
We're going down to the basement today, folks. Enjoy the ride.
Bringing it down to the basement.
Every person I've ever known that has met you that didn't know you before me has commented to me being like, he should do voiceover.
Motherfucker, I'm in a voice booth right now.
Yeah. No, I know. You are a voice actor.
He is the man with the voice of gold. If you were into sports, it would be great because you would make a great PA announcer.
Yeah. Yeah. I've considered that from time to time, being like, he's on the 20. He's on the 30. It's a goal. I don't know.
Depends on what sport you're talking about.
It's a touch goal.
It's a touch goal.
Touch the hand egg, Johnson.
That would be a fun bit, actually. Have somebody like over a game, like a recording of a game, take away the announcer voice, and somebody that doesn't know the sport do like audio coverage of it.
I think they did that for not SNL. SNL's that's not their bag, but I feel like some sketch show has done that bit before. I have a memory of seeing a video of it. It's like their version of the Snoop Dogg narrates Planet Earth.
Ethan, you're also the person with one of the most interesting job histories I've ever met. Like, from the escape room that we worked together at, of course, and then like crime tour and museum guide and like ice cream factory or whatever. Like,
I did not work at the ice cream museum. They did not fucking want me. I swore in my job interview.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean
it's
to
fine.
Rub salt in that wound.
The place looked like hell.
Yeah, I don't know that you would have enjoyed your time there. I went there with my nephews, and it seems like chaos incarnate.
Yeah, it just seemed like people were kind of cubicled off into their own. It really felt like Dante's Inferno circles of hell, where you could not leave your personal section until you died, I guess.
And it really depended on which section you're in on your enjoyment levels. Because if you were in the welcome section, oh, we're taking you on a transportation to a magical ice cream world, that'd be fine. Put you in a booth scooping ice cream, I think that would drive you up the wall.
Yeah, I'd rather just fucking work at a regular ice cream store. Like, come on, at the end of the day.
Sisyphus rolling an ice cream scoop uphill.
Well, does it melt as it goes?
Well, if you're in Dante's hell, then yes.
Oh, okay.
That's what they call a rocky road.
Nice.
Ethan is also in our D&D groups, has been playing games with us
seven,
than for
eight
me.
Years, yeah.
I was the adoptee.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever told that story on mic of how when you first joined the group, I literally was like, here's a goblin that the fucking people kidnapped. That's your character now.
Cranko, motherfucker.
I don't want to play him. Here you go.
I think you gave me the option, and I was like, no, I want to be the fucking goblin. It's
yeah.
great. Let's
yeah, you
do
offered
it.
Him, I think, one of the dwarfs that we met on that ship.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then you just made him into Morty.
Oh, jeez, guys. I just want to steal everything.
Oh, jeez, Grogu.
It's a fun time. But we're not here to talk about D&D. We're here to talk about Survivor.
God damn it.
God damn it, Survivor. And this season, boy, is off to a start.
Yeah.
Well, I want to hear Jared's thoughts, but more I want to hear Ethan's thoughts. Ethan, general vibes before we...
General vibes.
Well, should we get into the episode first before we do general vibes? Does
what
that make sense?
I think the question I have for Ethan is not on the season. Now, since this is your first experience of Survivor, like, what is your general vibe of Survivor? Is it what you expected it to be? And then we can bumper in.
Well, I have, like, cultural knowledge of Survivor, just seeing fucking memes and shit. So I know the tribes and the competition aspect and the elimination aspect, extinguish your torch, you can go home, that kind of shit. I know about immunity idols from when Dropout did that Survivor episode on Game Changer.
Ah, yes.
Hell yeah.
But beyond that, what I did not expect was how much there was actually going to be a survival aspect to it. Hmm. I thought it was going to be much more competition, and then these people would go to kind of a pre-prepared area to rest and have deeply uncomfortable social interactions in a Darwinian sense. But so that surprised me right off the bat. They were like, okay, you're just fucking dropping people in the middle of nowhere Brazil and saying, good luck. By the way, this girl has tonsillitis or strep throat. Yep. Don't know if they ever decided on which one. Have fun.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more. I think if you told Sam Reich or Brendan Lee Mulligan or anybody at Dropout that the pipeline of that episode wasn't people from Survivor finding their episode, it was that episode being like, oh, now I know something of Survivor, they would be so happy.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Like, I could imagine the sounds that would come out of them as at least, or at least Brendan and Allie being massive Survivor fans. Or was it Lou? I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, and being that it's been around since the 2000s, it kind of ebbs and flows in the cultural zeitgeist. Like, some people have huge, huge histories with it. Some people are like, oh yeah, I started in the pandemic and just binged it all.
A lot of people.
And some people are like, eh, it's not for me. And I get that. But
we'll see where Ethan lands.
It's my baby.
Yeah.
After this bumper.
Speaking of which, what year was this season?
Thank you for that awesome segue, Ethan. Since I bumpered in and not Steven.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. Weird. Hijacked. It was weird. I didn't like it. I'm never doing it again. This episode came out on September 17th of 2009.
Okay.
I'll go into like the details of stuff between seasons next episode. But yeah, no, this is probably recorded in early 2009.
Okay. That gives me no basis. I don't remember what was going on in 2009.
That's fascinating, because the Survivor Wiki says that is not the case, that it was in February of 2009 is when it runs.
Fuck is up with Paramount Plus?
It's fine. We'll go with yours.
Yeah, we'll stick with the official app, but, like, the app is bad.
That's a running gag, too, that the Paramount Plus app is terrible.
I know why. It's changed it to season 19.
Oh.
It is February 12th of 2009.
There we go. Yay.
Okay. Whoops.
Okay.
The Paramount Plus app is also bad because it switched it to 19 without me changing anything, and we watched 18. We watched Token Sheens.
We did.
No, Ethan and I watched it together.
Yay.
I wasn't making the same mistake again.
You, sit down with me. We're watching Survivor right now.
I'm sure that went over well.
You were there.
It was you.
Oh, I thought you were referring to someone before me.
No, I once gave somebody the wrong season. It's fine.
Ah.
Yeah, did you have any history that you wanted to bring up? Or
no, I'll do that in the next episode in the interest of time.
Hell yeah. All right, then let us get into the episode. Episode one, let's get rid of all the weak players before we even start. So we start here, and this is only our second season in HD. Like, we have finally transitioned into filling up the entirety of my screen, which is great. I love that. And this is a beautiful area.
Yeah. No, they clearly, because they would have planned, yeah, Token Sheens and Gabon at the same time, and they even though this, the hook of this season isn't, it's in HD, like, they clearly picked a spot for the beautiful nature.
Yeah, they're trying their best to make the most of this HD situation they got going on. Okay, what do? Let's go to the most beautiful places in the world instead of dirt outback Australia.
It's funny that you say that, because this, the environment this season reminds me a lot of Australia.
That's fair.
It's a lot of that red sand and red dirt.
Yeah. It's sand. It's coarse. And
it's rough. It gets everywhere.
I hate it.
And when I think of Brazil, I don't necessarily think of desert.
No.
But it's a big old country.
It's a massive country. Takes up at least a third of the entire South American continent. I promise I wasn't on the African season of Survivor.
you're really starting to lean into that, huh?
Well, we start, and it's fascinating because we have Jeff just hanging out in the back of a truck talking about this season, but all the contestants are there with him.
And none of them look happy.
No. They look so pissed.
I think they were told, don't you dare say anything. Jeff's giving promos. Do not interrupt the man.
Yeah. But I do love what they do next with it, which is all these individual confessionals of people's first impressions of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I did really enjoy that.
And Jeff says it gets up to 120 degrees. Rivers are the only source of water around this area. And we are already split into our two tribes, which I will now share with Ethan our nice photo of everything. Whee!
Woo!
That's our cast.
I recognize those people.
Real quick, though, the heat is going to be, I assume, a problem. Like, they mention at one point it's like 110 degrees and going to get hotter that day. And that's insane.
That's a nightmare.
That's worse than we've ever seen.
My body cannot fathom 120 degrees.
No.
And I can't imagine it's like a dry Arizona heat, unless it is, and I'm just confused.
They're not in rainforest, so it could be pretty dry. They're in a relatively arid part of Brazil from what they've shown us.
Okay.
And they're also right on a riverbank without too much overhanging vegetation, so.
Higher elevation, too, but man, I don't care what kind of moisture level you got. That sun is a deadly laser.
There's going to be some real bad sunburn.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And I think at least we've gotten to the point where they started giving the contestants sunscreen.
Yeah, that was pretty early.
Sunscreen and bug spray.
Yeah.
Those are your two amenities.
Well, and
here.
A toothbrush.
I don't know that they give them toothbrushes.
Or, like, I've seen people use, maybe they make their own, but, like, everyone seems to have the same one every season. They're, like, rubbing their teeth with, like, bamboo sticks.
Yeah, it's a bamboo stick.
Yeah, but there isn't bamboo everywhere.
I don't think they've been in places where there haven't been bamboo.
Okay, that might be true.
I don't think they're giving toothbrushes because they very much lean into that. That's a luxury, and you can get it in a reward sometimes.
Survivor, sponsored by the American Dentist Association. We will make money off of these people when they return.
Yeah, their dentist must not be too happy when they get back.
Their fucking PCPs must not be too happy. Jesus Christ. you did what? You went to Brazil? For $1 million? Nope. Okay.
Okay, you buried the lead there. All right. Yeah.
How much does malaria cost you? Malaria treatment?
Well, I was going to say malaria is free. They'll give that one on the house.
They gave that to Al Capone, by the way.
Malaria?
Yeah. Tried to treat his neurosyphilis in prison.
Whoa.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they thought the medical technique at the time was that malaria would raise your temperature so much that the fever would supposedly burn the syphilis out, and they would immediately treat it to bring down the malaria and stop it from doing more damage.
Oh my god, old-timey medicine is insane. And by old-timey, that would be like the 20s or 30s.
That was the 40s, almost.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Late 30s, early 40s.
I see that you've been shot. Let's put you in the freezer, and then the lack of blood flowing through your body will help heal your your shot wound.
That's actually, wait, Steven, you joke, that's not a terrible idea. If you have no other options.
Sure.
What medical, like, treatment that we have now that 100 years from now, they're going to be like, what the fuck were they thinking? And I'm not talking, like, anti-vax stuff, because, like, we think that now about those people. But, like, what common, at least most of us do, hopefully, what, like, common medical practice that's done right now do you think is going to seem insane in 100 years?
I would hope, this is getting a little meta, but I would hope the, like, over-reliance on just shotgunning meds, because people will ideally in the future be generally healthier and more resistant, and we won't have things like superbugs going around that are resistant to all these vaccines and such.
Like over antibiotics and stuff?
Yeah, essentially. Over medicating.
Better diagnostics to like actually like find the specific thing.
Yeah.
What do you think, Steven?
I think it's that currently vitamins and supplements are not regulated even slightly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe.
There's zero regulation. Someone can just tell you it's vitamin D and it's vitamin D.
Vitamin D's nuts.
Nice.
Yay.
I hope that
I am a man and I am mature.
I hope that it's chemotherapy. Because, like, the idea that we, it's like, okay, we're going to put this poison in your body to kill the thing and also hopefully not you in 100 years with a better, like, hopefully a better, like, medicine to help treat cancer will be like, they were just injecting poison? What the fuck?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Streamline some poison just to...
You get a little bit of poison as a treat.
That's alcohol.
Oh, okay, there you go. Yeah. Okay, so we then break it down. This side over here in the red, this is Jalapau, or as the one lady says, jalapeno. In black, we have Timbira, and I think...
Okay, first of all, Ethan pointed this out when we were watching together. That's not black. That's navy blue.
It's such navy blue. The flag is fucking navy blue.
I agree. I think they didn't... They've done black buffs before.
Yeah. So
this seems kind of... not a cop-out, but somebody screwed up.
This is weird.
Yeah.
There's no reason to call it the wrong color.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
Maybe someone was... Wait, I was going to say Spanish. They were trying to avoid black and Spanish in any sort of way, but it's Brazil. It's Portuguese.
Yeah.
So throw that idea out the window. So let us go through our cast of characters here. Would you like to start with black or red?
You got to bet on black.
That's black.
All right. Black it is. Then in alphabetical order, starting with Timbira... Starting with Brennan Sinnott. I probably screwed that up. Brennan Sinnott, 30, from Vail, Colorado, an entrepreneur. Brennan is right here.
That man's not built for this.
Do you remember? Can you give me a highlight of him from the episode? Because he is not coming back.
I think he's the one that Coach talks to toward the end of the episode when they're talking about Sandy and her performance.
Yes.
And he's like, Coach has given me strange vibes, if my memory is correct.
Well, then I at least assume he has good judgment, because Coach also gives me strange vibes. Yeah, okay, I remember now. He's the one that Coach comes up to, is like, hey, I'm playing this game hard. And he's like, okay.
You got it, dude.
Cool. Sounds good.
And now is as much of a time as any to remind our audience that this is not the full scope of these human beings. They are just characters in this show that we are seeing a small snippet of their entire being. So we're going to rag on them for what we do see.
Yeah.
These are two-dimensional caricatures. Thank you, editors.
His headshot is giving guy, like, mid-level office worker whose wife of like 7 years has been cheating on him for 5, and he knows it, but he doesn't have the courage to leave her.
I was going to go with just finished up his MBA, not really sure what to do, and he's working an entry-level accounting job, thinking, what the fuck did I just do?
Yours is more wholesome than mine.
That's a corporate headshot, no two ways about it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because they did these in Brazil, I assume.
And yet the trees behind him still look fake.
All right, moving on to Candace Smith, 31, from Los Angeles, California, an attorney. Candace is Where did I lose Candace? There she is.
Something I'm picking up already from just the second person is how top-heavy this episode is in the people that are highlighted. Like, there's like four or five people that get a lot of the spotlight this episode and a lot of other people that are put in the background.
I was real nervous where you were going with that because I'm like, did you just pick that out because Candace has a large chest?
I didn't even know
how top heavy this cast is.
Oh my
God. Jared, we can't say that.
I didn't even know that because I don't remember her that much from the episode and you can't see that in the headshot.
That's true. I can see that in the headshot, but you cannot see that in the headshot.
Ethan, do you have impressions of Candace?
I frankly don't remember. Black team, right?
Yep. Yes.
I got nothing. I got nothing at all.
That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I got nothing either. I was trying to pull something out. I guess I'll use this moment to highlight she's one of three people of color on the season. We're back to having two, maybe three, if you're lucky, people of color on the season. Be better, Survivor.
Yeah, I guess technically I think it's four if you consider our woman who went home today.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But then, yeah, that's...
Well, I guess four's better than it has been.
Sure. Okay. Well, here's one that you will remember. Coach Wade,
yeah.
37, from Bolivar, Missouri, a soccer coach.
Oh, God.
Not only a soccer coach... But he, what was it, like...
He conducts a symphony orchestra.
I almost said opera, and I was like, that's not right. Yeah, conducts a symphony orchestra on his off time?
Yeah, as
okay.
You do.
Sure, I mean, listen, we could all contain multitudes. Ethan, do you have anything specific you want to say about Coach before I fucking rail into him?
The vibes are off. For a guy who is involved in so many communal activities in his regular life, he has a very selfish mindset portrayed on this show.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
He is a leader. He is someone who takes charge, but he seems to be a person who is going to swipe you out of the knees when he gets the chance.
Yeah. He seems like a cult leader.
You're just saying like, that because of the ponytail.
It is not helping. The ponytail is not helping. But there's just a, like, I don't know, like a... He sees himself as the next coming of Jesus kind of vibe around him. I have no evidence for it's just a gut reaction.
I do think he's the type of guy who believes that he can lead anybody. And I think that's going to bite him in the ass.
I kind of hope so. But we'll see. You know, it's one episode. Maybe he won't suck.
Sorry, I'm digging into his bio here. He traveled the world playing the trumpet before most kids could even spell trumpet.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, all right. He's not beating those allegations.
Oh, my God.
Oh, this is funny. Wade sees coaching as another form of manipulation.
What the fuck?
I think that's all we need to know about this man in one word.
Yeah, he just said worse things about himself than I ever could.
I guess my question is he coaching men or women's soccer? Because that gives me different vibes.
He could be coaching
kids'
soccer.
That would be funny, too. Like a U12 soccer team.
That's what I thought. When I saw he was a soccer coach, I thought, this man is teaching children to play a sport.
No, for it to be his full-time job, I'm sure it's like university, maybe high school.
I think he did say university, like a college soccer team.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Southwest Baptist University.
Southwest Baptist. So also like a religious school. Okay.
Wait, this is bonkers. So wait, he coaches in Missouri, but he is conducting and artistic director for a symphony orchestra in California.
Oh. So he like flies out to California to do that and then go back to Missouri.
Yeah.
He's got a commute.
Got a hell of a commute.
Jesus.
Damn.
Gross. Okay. Did you have more things you wanted to rail in him for?
I have a feeling I'll have plenty of opportunities to do that this season. Just something about him tells me that.
Okay. Then moving on to Debbie Beebe. That's great. 46, from Auburn, Alabama, a school principal. Debbie is second in, second down.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's all I got to say.
All right. Yeah, not much with her either. Very, very top heavy in who got focus on this tribe is what I'm realizing, even more than from Candace. Yeah, I mean, she has the look of a Karen. I don't know that she is, but I immediately went to go get my manager when you pointed out her headshot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who's your manager?
You.
Oh, God. Ethan, any thoughts?
Not really.
Cool.
Is there anything interesting in her bio?
Here, let's find out. Debbie Beebe. It's just a great name. The full pull here. A self-described people person, Deborah Beebe is a middle school principal and married mom from Auburn who believes that her natural leadership abilities and tactful problem-solving skills will contribute to her success as a castaway on Survivor.
Okay.
Deborah's also known as Bubbles.
Why?
Her enthusiastic and energetic personality, in addition to her take-charge attitude.
Okay.
She is one of the older contestants, hopes to not be a hindrance, and she trained alongside Olympic athletes and still rises every morning at 4:30 a.m. to get in her daily workout.
Jesus Christ. Damn. Well, I was going to say being older is always, you know, always puts you at risk early in the show for going home. But if she has that strict of a workout regimen and she didn't stick out as a hindrance to her team this episode, she's probably fine.
Cool. Then let's move on to Aaron Lobdell, 26, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a hairstylist. Aaron, right next door here.
Mm-hmm. This isn't the tribe that went to tribal council.
Correct.
No, yeah. No. Yep.
That's
yeah.
why we didn't get much from them.
I was like, I was pretty sure this wasn't the tribe that Sandy was on, but I was like, nope. Just in case.
Sandy was the one who coined the term tribe jalapeno.
Yes, true. Truth. Okay. Yeah, that sure is a hairdresser. She looks a little bit like Evanescence.
I was going to say, she looks like she just finished releasing her hit song, Skater Boy.
Have they ever done Celebrity Survivor?
Not in America. Jared and I were actually just having this conversation off mic that there are celebrities who appear on Survivor, but they haven't done a full This Is Just Celebrity season. And I think that's for the best.
Yeah, probably. I'm just surprised they haven't capitalized on it.
Yeah. It would even the playing field for celebrities, because anyone that gets recognized as a celebrity is an immediate liability for them.
I feel like the toughest thing about doing that, though, with celebrities is that the $1 million is the thing that keeps the game, like, really structurally sound, is that there is a large, large prize at the end. You have a bunch of multi-million-dollar celebrities. It's still a big deal, but, like, I don't know. Are they going to live through these conditions when they already are set for life?
Who knows? Okay. Any other thoughts about Aaron before we move on?
Anything interesting in her bio?
Not really. She works out. She runs. It's pretty generic. She's from Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Hopefully she's not boring.
So, therefore, being from Wisconsin, she is a binge-drinking champion.
Is that what it says in there?
No, but oh, okay. I'm just making assumptions because that's what else is there to do in Wisconsin.
Well, jeez. Considering that could have been in there, I truly believe that she just put that in there. Sorry, Ethan, what were you saying?
I just said cheese in Wisconsin. Jeez.
Cheese.
We all love cheese. Okay, Ethan, well then this gives me the opportunity. What's your favorite cheeses?
Ooh,
favorite cheeses.
Blue cheese or goat cheese? It depends on what I'm if I want something more bitter or not that day.
I mean, I don't usually eat like just cheese. I usually incorporate it into cooking, so it's really hard to go away.
That's
from
That's because you're
a
normal, structured human, Ethan.
I don't really step away from a good like sharp or extra sharp cheddar because there's just so much you can do with that. Tacos, mac and cheese, those are the first two things. There are more.
Those are the only two things.
But if I'm just eating like cheese, I'm flying solo with the cheese. I grew up on fucking Baby Bells, so like basic Swiss has a nostalgic place in my heart. But if I'm going for something a little bit more interesting, I do like Gruyere. I do like Gruyere.
What about you, Steven?
I'm a basic bitch. I love a good pepper jack cheese.
Okay.
Like those blocks of cheese and you just chop off little slices of pepper jack.
I just bite from it.
I hate you right
now. I live
now.
Alone.
I hate you. Oh my
God.
That's
God
right.
can
live
still
alone.
See you, Jared.
I know, and I do it despite him. Ethan, have you ever been to the Mars Cheese Castle, like just past the border of Illinois, Wisconsin?
No, I've never been. One day, though. One day I'll eat the whole thing.
It's pretty good. Eat the whole cheese castle. Yeah, they have like a fuck ton of cheese and like also like meats and stuff of like, I assume, local Wisconsin farmers, hopefully.
Hopefully.
A lot, so many different types of cheese curds. I did not know there were that many types of cheese curds. Think of a flavor. There's a cheese curd of it.
I fucking love cheese curds. Like a garlic, I don't even remember what the exact flavoring is. They had like a white cheese with garlic in it, and it was delicious.
Hot take, I like them fried, but like just like the squeaky, like uncooked cheese curds. Eh.
Oh.
They're too rubbery. It's a texture thing.
I think that's the curd, you see.
Yeah.
The curd is,
anyway.
The squeak is in the curd.
The squeak is in the curd. Moving on to Jerry Sims, 49, from Rock Hill, South Carolina, a U.S. Army sergeant. He is our guy right here.
Speaking of Celebrity Survivor, boy, does he look like Carl Weathers in that headshot specifically.
He does look like Carl Weathers.
Ethan, any thoughts on Carl Weathers?
As an actor, no. As this man, yes. He's got some potential. He's got some potential. I would be curious to learn more about his personality as the season goes on, because he seems like he's a relatively canny dude. Seems to understand that he has a skill set that benefits him more than most people here, and is not unfamiliar with teamwork, but also familiar with the ways that it breaks down. Mm-hmm. Which will be interesting, because he's a sergeant. He's used to leading a small team, which will be very, very interesting to see how he and Coach particularly get on.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a sergeant's a non-commissioned officer.
Yep, NCO.
Yeah, okay, great. So he at least came up through the ranks. Like, he's not somebody that's like a lieutenant that like they went to officer school and became an officer directly and like were never enlisted. I've talked before about like being in the Army, I feel like can be a disadvantage on Survivor because you're so used to structure, but he seems to have it figured out. Like, use the skills that it gave me positively, hide the fact that I was in the Army. Do not fucking tell a soul, because it then you are perceived differently, and I would argue negatively of that whole, like, anytime you're leading, it's like, well, I'm not your platoon, shut up. Yeah, I'm excited for him.
Yeah, and if this colors your opinion on him a little more, he is a specialist in nuclear operations.
Fucking rad.
Jesus Christ.
So, dude can, I don't know what exactly that entails. Like, I assume he's not a nuclear scientist, but he, like, specializes in maybe nuclear subs, or...
That reads to me like somebody whose job it is to plan potential nuclear strikes.
I would say more post. I would say, especially if he's in the Army, that is a guy who is going into areas that have fallout with his team to scout them out and make sure they are safe enough to move through.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
If it's Army, it's footwork, and that's probably what he would be doing.
That tracks.
Yeah, cool. Or like, you know, because we think of nukes and we think of, like, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or like, you know, these massive, like, town destroyers. The world has developed, like, tactical nuclear weapons that thankfully have never been deployed, but that can, like, take out a city block. Like, they're not necessarily, like, all the big bombs. And so, like, maybe that's his job, is like, okay, well, if we ever had to use this on, you know, this smaller city or this area of the city, you guys are the ones that come in directly afterwards and clear out anybody who survived or, like, deal with it. It's very fucking grim.
It's wonderful to know that you have a job that has so little job security, because the second someone fires any sort of nuclear device, it's fucking over.
Yeah.
That man is trained for a situation where he will be useful for maybe 10 minutes.
I would like to not think about the possible incoming nuclear threat to us all.
You told us what his job was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what he had to live with every day, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Wild guy to have on Survivor.
Yeah, seems like a rad dude despite.
Knowing that your job is possibly harbinger of the apocalypse is insane. Watch, someone's gonna write and be like, nah, he was somebody that tested the, like you said, the engines on nuclear subs or something.
Okay, moving on to Sierra Reed. Sierra, 23, from LA, a model. Sierra is up here in the top left.
We got a lot of Sierra.
We got a lot of Sierra. Jared, tell me, what do you think about Sierra?
Well, she reminds me a little bit of Courtney from China, just in, like, her role in the tribe.
Sure.
Smaller and weaker in this case because she has strep throat, possibly.
Yeah.
And that, I think that getting... She made all the right decisions in a bad situation. So she got voted to be the one who was going to get voted off.
Like, yeah.
Basically the test vote, the survey vote of like who should go home. And it was her. I think that her building the camp was a really smart decision. It helped her out a lot. And I think just owning up that like, hey, I was sick. I was trying to hide it. I will get better. I'm on antibiotics is the right play. Hopefully she does get better. Because if she stays sick, she's going home.
Yeah, how bananas is that? You're sitting, waiting to go on Survivor, then you're like, I have a fever of 102 degrees, but I really want to play this game. Can we figure this out, please?
I'm surprised they let her play.
I am a little surprised, too. Maybe it was just the perfect timing of they caught it, they're kind of monitoring her, but... If things go south, we're pulling her immediately.
We're also taking her word for it that she had a 102-degree fever because she might have had one and not, like, a couple days ago and not had one the day that they went out. And, like, that wouldn't be a lie, but just like a, oh, I'm sick and I'm going to use this detail from a few days ago. But, like, I don't think they'd let her trek through the desert for 8 hours on a 102-degree fever.
I guarantee she knew exactly what temperature she was the minute she stepped on that truck because production would have made it very clear, like, this is what's happening. If this goes south, you're gone. You're done.
Crazy. Especially because, like, having a lot of fluids and all that is really important when you're sick.
Yeah. And by the way, you're going to go live out in a desert for a bit.
What does having a 102-degree fever feel like in a 110-degree environment?
It feels bad.
That's a good point. Maybe the world being way worse around you can mask the fact to you, but I really doubt it.
Yeah. Ethan, what do you think of Sierra?
Poor, poor Sierra. She was dealt such a rough hand. And I'm impressed by with her was her honesty with the group of like, yeah, I'm sick.
I'm sick. What of it?
What do you want from me? And that I think that as she, well, honestly, it's hard to tell someone's personality when they're fucking suffering. So it'll be interesting to see how she evolves and starts to show, or rather the editors start to show us the person that she is. When she's healthier.
Do you think she goes home if her tribe loses this challenge?
The challenge in the episode?
Yeah. If her tribe's the one that goes to tribal council?
Yes. Because that being sick is... It's very easy to mentally understand that it is not someone's fault necessarily. But in that competitive scenario... Very hard to go against your base instinct and be like, yeah, no, we gotta get her out of here. But that would all depend on how they on who shone during the challenge.
Yeah, I think yes by default, but there's truly nothing she could have, like, she excelled in the challenge, so I don't see a reason why. Well, I shouldn't say excelled.
She pulled her weight.
She did fine. She did good enough.
And that's all you need to do in Survivor sometimes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I think it is kind of unanswerable just because we got so little of the other contestants. I asked you a question that I didn't have an answer to. But I think that if she did get voted out, then if her tribe had gone to tribal council and if she had gotten voted out, she would have done everything correct to stay and just been dealt a bad hand.
All right.
That's the way I'll put it.
Cool. Then we'll move on to our last contestant on Timbira, Tyson Apostle, 29, from Heber City, Utah, a professional cyclist. Tyson.
Okay, wait. Professional cyclist? I missed that in the episode.
Yep, professional cyclist.
What does that mean?
He cycles like a professionally.
Biker.
No, I like racing. Yeah. Then okay,
probably yeah.
Okay,
like a road biker.
Okay, that makes more sense. I didn't know what it could be because I was like, it just feels like a weird way to put that.
How else would you put it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
How would you describe Lance Armstrong?
He's a do-good bike man.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's what should be the job title. Good bike man.
Good bike man.
Okay, well, then we can go past that. I feel dumb now. I'm sad that I already used cult leader for coach because Tyson actually feels like he could be... Okay, you know what? No, coach feels like he could be like the scummy, like sleazy cult leader. Tyson feels like he's the like golden boy cult leader.
He's Mormon.
Is he Mormon? Okay, I knew he's from Utah. Oh no, he says he's Mormon.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, okay. While he's naked.
He's the more cult of personality.
Yes.
Like, hey, we love you all. It's all great. Here, have some Kool-Aid. Because we love each other.
It is a power move to be the first person to get completely nude in front of everybody in your tribe.
That's true.
It truly is. And a move that we've seen before on Survivor.
The girls on his tribe seemed really into it.
I don't know about that.
He's attractive.
I don't know if they seem... Granted, Cyclist probably has a decent body. I don't know if they were super into it. They may just have been laughing like, what the fuck? We knew this was going to happen, but Jesus Christ, he's just going for it.
That's fair.
Got that body, yaddy, yaddy.
He does have that body, yaddy, yaddy.
He does not have that facial hairy, though.
I will say to his credit, because, like, you know, Hatch would always walk around naked, and we're like, what the fuck are you doing? He wasn't doing it to, like, rub it in anyone's face. It was like, I'm going to get in the water, and I don't want my... Or I don't know if it was, like... Like, I wouldn't want to jump in with all my clothes when I have one set of fucking clothes on Survivor into the gross river. Fuck that.
And he said it too. I don't want to get all wet and soaking before we get to the challenge. And then the challenge, they had to go in the water.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. But yeah, I don't know. They definitely gave him a lot of screen time for being on the tribe that didn't go to tribal council.
Sure. I think that's mostly because he was the one who got naked and they were like, oh, we got to learn more about this guy.
I need to know more about the naked man.
Yeah, he seems interesting. I think there seems to be a protagonist spotlight on him immediately.
All right. Then that wraps up Timbira. Let's get into Jalapeno.
God damn it.
The Red Tribe, starting with Carolina Eastwood, 27, from West Hollywood, California, a bartender.
Oh, Carolina.
Carolina is one of those unfortunate circumstances where she learned her mistake, but it was already too late.
Yeah. She learned her mistake, and she apologized for her mistake.
Yeah.
They had a really nice conversation about it.
I don't know if that conversation was as nice as it seemed.
Say more.
I feel like there was some petty subtext in the words they were saying to each other. I did not read that as a super genuine apology or acceptance between her and Sandy.
Okay.
I could be wrong. My perception could be colored by the fact that I don't watch too much reality TV, so I'm predisposed to think that people are not being sincere.
I think you're not far off in the Carolina-Sandy conversation. In the Carolina and I want to get her name right, Taj conversation.
That's the one I was talking about.
Where they're in the water and she's like, hey, I want you to, and I'm telling you this just to your face because I don't want to make a big deal about it, but I think you came off way too strong here.
Oh, no. Then in that conversation, yeah, I think that was actually like a surprising, like, oh, accepting of criticism. That's not what I expected. So that was a pretty chill moment. I really enjoyed that. Taj has a
And I feel like I took a personal L that she goes home after that conversation because I've oftentimes been like, just own up to your mistake and apologize. It's fine. And then it isn't fine.
It's so tough because literally we're just making vibe checks on this first vote. And she... also failed pretty miserably in that challenge.
True.
So
yep.
It's you screw up on the emotional conversational side and the physical I'm gonna win this challenge side. Hard to keep yourself afloat.
You paint a big target on your back.
Yeah.
Yeah. She kind of fell victim to the fact that Sandy has old woman Hulk strength.
That is not a strength that we've seen too often in Survivor.
Very rare.
All right.
But yeah, she seems like interesting and fun, and reminds me a little bit of actually from last season in Gabon, the girl that goes home that's like, it's early in the season and it's like opposite of Sugar, where it's like, it's either her or Sugar going home, and Ace like fucking hates this girl and goes after her, and she, Paloma. She's like kind of weird and quirky, and it like, but I don't know. Yeah, like somebody that could have been really interesting if she would have stayed along longer. Yeah.
A young Latina woman getting voted out in the first round.
Well, that wasn't the first round in Gabon.
Oh, you're right. It was the...
it was like the third vote.
It was the other young girl who went home.
Yeah, but... Okay, well, sure. Yeah, I guess there's also that comparison.
No, I was trying to make the through line. I wasn't accusing you of making a through line. Anyway, moving on to Joe Dowdle, 26, from Austin, Texas, a real estate salesman. Joe's down here. He's got a lot of forehead going on.
He's so much forehead.
Holy shit. That's fucking Megamind.
It is really progressive of Survivor to let an Easter Island head play in this season. Ethan, do you have any thoughts on him?
I don't remember this man. I don't even remember his forehead, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I think he was just mostly in group scenes. Yeah. I don't remember him sticking out reason, which isn't a bad thing in the first episode, to be honest.
He does have stiff competition with that other entrepreneur guy. I'm looking at both their headshots right now, and telling them apart is a little bit difficult.
The battle of the foreheads.
Battle of the foreheads. Yeah, it's interesting that, I don't know, he stuck out to me in his voice. I think similar to this podcast grouping we have here, he had the low voice in a room full of not low voices. So every time I was like, oh, someone else is talking, it's Joe. I found Joe.
I guess I'll have stronger opinions on him as the season goes. Anything interesting in his bio?
Joe is truly a genuine Texas cowboy. After rigorous selection process in combination with a high GPA from the University of Texas at Austin, he was selected to join the Texas Cowboys, which is a service organization where members act as ambassadors for, according to Joe, the greatest university in the world, the University of Texas.
Oh, God. So he's one of those people that loved his college so much he stayed involved with it after graduating? Okay.
He wears a funny hat as the head of the Alumni Association.
Wait, he's not JT, right?
He's not JT.
No,
okay.
No,
okay.
This is the weird thing, because this man is trying desperately in his bio to pass himself as a good old authentic cowboy, and then JT is right fucking behind him.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, is Joe part of the name JT? But okay,
nope.
Great. He's just JT, but less memorable. Got it.
JT cosplayer. He is
JD Joe Dowdle. Anyway, moving on.
We have the Texas Cowboy and the cooler Texas Cowboy. Yeah,
well, he's not from the Texas. Other one, JT Thomas, 24, from Mobile, Alabama.
Now, wait, is it JT Thomas or is it Joe Thomas or Joseph Thomas and that's JT? Are we calling him Joseph Thomas Thomas?
Honestly, I think so.
Hilarious.
James Thomas Jr.
Okay, yeah, JTJ. So JT Thomas would be James Thomas Thomas.
JT Thomas Thomas.
Jr.
Yeah, Jr. JT is right
Esquire.
Up here. How do I feel about JT?
I like this man. I like his vibe.
I'm always wary of somebody that has that good old boy shtick about them, just because of history, but... He did not give me bad vibes.
Oh,
it
can turn south in like 2 seconds.
Well, he's from the south, so that would make sense.
Further south, deep south. But
Alabama.
But yeah, no, good vibes, which is why I think he's being set up for a horrendous fall from grace.
Agreed. I feel like he was born to die.
Mm. Yeah.
Like the fucking, he's going to get backstabbed by somebody on this season real hard. I think probably before the merge. But we'll see.
I feel like every time I look at his face, I'm just going to, from here on out, I will think of Sweet Home Alabama, the lick that opens it.
Wait, so if this season is a lot like Australia in terms of environment, in my opinion, he is Discount Colby.
Okay. Well, he was the first member of his family to go to college and earn a degree.
Okay.
That's cool. Dang. Anyway, moving on to Sandy Bergen. 53 from Louisville, Kentucky, a bus driver.
Oh, Sandy.
Sandy.
Oh, yeah, she does give bus driver vibes.
Yeah, oh, yes. Ethan, you want to take it away with Sandy?
I mean, she's just kind of the polar opposite of Sierra, even though they were in the exact same situation.
Yep.
And, I mean, that's pretty solid. That's pretty solid TV, I will say, having two people set themselves up as such a dichotomy.
But yeah, it's true.
Jesus wept. Sandy is motivated by hate, and that's going to get her pretty far, I think.
Oh, see, I disagree. I think it's going to get her voted out very soon.
We'll
because
see.
If your first reaction to somebody, like, or like, be of people coming after you, is to immediately isolate yourself and try to burn everything down, you, like, you're fucked. You're not going to make any alliances. You're not going to trust anybody. I think her case, if she does make it far, is because people won't see her as a threat to win. They're like, oh, this woman cannot make social connections. Great. Keep her around as long as possible. And I will say, she kicked fucking ass at that challenge.
She did.
So that is a point in her favor of staying around a little bit longer.
There is.
But she seems difficult to work with.
She does. But there's also the point that she is, granted, if she learns what a fucking palm tree is, she is sitting on immunity.
Or what a pace is.
Dear God.
Oh, man. But if she is able to find that immunity idol, and she learns the tiniest amount of diplomacy, she might be able to turn it into a bargain.
Maybe. Yeah, she seems like one of those people that is fun for TV, and I would not want to know in real life at all. She actually reminds me of a couple of older women I knew in when I used to be like heavily in the evangelical church, of just like these older women that are like full of hate, and you don't quite understand why, but like everything about them is just like they just get so mean so quick.
Well, I have to read from her bio because it's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So she's from Kentucky, where she takes pride in being the state champion of the school bus rodeo.
Fucking course she is.
A night owl by occupation, Sandy works the graveyard shift transporting construction workers to the work sites. As a professional driver for 30 years, she is not a stranger to catcalls, especially since she is the one doing it.
Okay, that's pretty funny.
That's funny as hell.
I can't imagine her catcalling a bunch of construction workers.
I can. I can imagine her slapping them on the ass on the way out.
Yep.
Oh, 100%.
Good job, team. Good job, team.
Go get him, Tiger. Cool. Any final thoughts on Sandy?
God help Jalapeno.
Yeah, she's... You're always going to know where you stand with her, and it will always be negative.
All right.
Her going away from the tribe for that long, saying she had to use the bathroom, like, it's clear her tribe does not take her seriously as a threat, because otherwise I'd be like, hey, guys, what's going on? We got to get rid of her.
Oh, she's old. She's just got to take a real big dump.
And, like, isolating herself and not building the camp. Man, she is so lucky she did well at that first challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
She was in the hottest of hot seats.
Yep.
Moving on to Spencer Duhm, and that is D-U-H-M.
Okay.
18 from Gainesville, Florida.
18?
Student.
Oh, yeah. Youngest 18. Guy ever on Survivor, I think he said.
He called himself 19 in the episode, because I remember writing down, like, is he actually younger than Frosty, who was 19 in China?
He must have towed that line when he was, I'm assuming his pregame stuff, he was 18.
Yeah, probably.
And while he was playing, he's actually 19.
But okay, yeah, so youngest contestant ever. I don't know. Do you have anything on him, Ethan?
I got nothing. He fresh-faced, seems relatively cheerful.
Yeah, I think being that young, the best thing you can do in these early episodes is blend into the background. Because this is where you, I mean, he is a young guy rather than a young girl, which makes him less likely to go home early when perceived physical strength is more of a boon. But I think just like don't stick out should be his goal in these first two, three episodes. And he did that.
Spencer is a gay single man and currently resides in Gainesville, Florida.
Okay.
Oh yeah. His birthday is December 20th. So pre-game, he was certainly, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Then, any final thoughts about Spencer?
No, I'm sure we'll get more of him. There just wasn't a lot. There wasn't a lot of meat on the bone there.
Yeah. There's a later Spencer in Survivor that he kind of looks like, which made my brain flip out a little bit. But We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, it is interesting. I know I just said no and then move on, but being so young and at least like somewhat physically fit, I feel like he gets the advantages of being a perceived challenge beast, but none of the disadvantages. Like, he's not somebody you have to get rid of early, but he's not somebody that you look at and go, oh, that guy's going to be a problem. Mm.
Then we're going to move to Stephen Fishbach, 29, New York City, New York, a corporate consultant.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to let Ethan go first on this because now once you said his full name, I have something I have to say.
That name sounds incredibly familiar to me. Stephen Fishbach.
He was the one, he had the quote of the episode to me, which is talking about one, I don't remember which contestant it was, but I don't know how much he's going to like the gay or the anxious New York Jew. That's what it was. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, yeah. That was
hilarious. Him.
I have a feeling I know where you're going with the thing that you're saying, but Ethan, yeah, if you have any thoughts, let's let you take the floor.
Not many, just kind of negative vibes from him. I feel a lot of, I feel like he's really self-conscious about his presence and really wants to prove himself, but doesn't quite know how. That's what I got from him. Beyond that, he did fine in the task. He was in there with the crowd and about it.
Yeah. I felt like he was trying to blend into the background for most of this episode. Don't stick out. Don't be the sore thumb.
Not a bad strategy in the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have heard the name Fishbach before. I think actually Eric might have said it when we were interviewing him. But it was also a name I had never heard in any particular context. But it's such a unique name that I do remember hearing it from like a long, long time ago.
Sure.
That doesn't necessarily mean he goes far. Like, it could be something that he is like, I mean, you know, T-Bird didn't do great in Africa, has a really successful podcast. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know if he's like a personality or what. I did like his energy though. And I think he seems to have the right amount, like he does have anxiety or he calls himself anxious or whatever, but it's not outward. Like we've seen people that have some like, some social anxiety, all that. And they kind of like Sandy, they just like come after people with it or like they make it everyone else's problem. And Fishbach, as I'm going to call him exclusively because you're Steven, and that's weird.
Sure.
Is much more like, I don't know, quiet. And I think it could even end up being like, is he going to be Amber and he needs a Rob? Mm. Is my question.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just fucking remembered why that name is familiar. Markiplier's last name is Fishbach.
Oh.
Well, maybe that's where I've heard it before then.
That's where
maybe
I got best it before. Yep. Mark Fishbach.
Or brothers. Yeah, so I'm going to give a little warning flag to Jared and to our listeners at home that as we've seen in seasons thus far, just because a name is familiar does not guarantee success.
Yes.
Thus, I mean, the prime example thus far that we've seen, Boston Rob has not won a season.
True. Well, he kind of won All-Star.
He won via his wife.
Ethan, this is a season where the Boston Rob did not win the season, but his alliance member, Amber, that he like ended up like early in the show having a romantic connection with, between the end of filming and them reading the votes, they got engaged and are still married to this day. So it's like, he didn't win. Like, he's not a winner of Survivor at this point, but like, he won Survivor. Let's be real.
He won something worth more than $1 million.
Yeah.
A wife and $1 million in a joint bank account.
Yeah. But, like, some of the biggest names that we've seen, the...
Cerie's not one.
Cerie, the Colbys, there's a lot of big names that live in the Survivor canon that are not winners.
It could even be that he just gets punked really hard. I think he probably makes the merge because I know his name. Because okay. At this point in Survivor history, if you go home before the merge, you probably aren't coming back.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Unless you go out in a blaze of glory.
That's true.
All right. Then let's move on to Sydney Wheeler, 24, from San Diego, California. A model, idiot. Down here. We have a lot of models this season.
Yeah. It is just a very conventionally attractive cast.
For reference, I was quoting Zoolander.
Ah.
Male model, idiot.
I did wonder. I wondered why the idiot was in there.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if she said
something. I'm not calling her an idiot. I swear.
I don't remember much about her, to be honest.
Was she the one who was lagging behind during the challenge?
Yeah, her and Carolina were struggling carrying those.
That's not. I mean, granted, they all lost, so it's probably
but
fading a little bit, and we'll see if that comes back to bite her. Is like, oh wait, you were also weak. We'll see how she does in the next task, I guess.
It's very what have you done for me lately? So like, you know, she has one or probably two challenges, reward and immunity, to prove that she can be better at the challenge, but if not, she is on the hottest seat in the tribe at this point.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Then moving on to Taj Johnson George, 37, from Nashville, Tennessee, a former pop star.
Yeah, hey, what's that about?
Yeah, what's going on with Taj?
What's talk about Taj. I'm going to figure out what pop star she was.
I mean, she was bold enough to go up just straight to Carolina, be like, hey, you need to take it down about 10 notches. You're not giving a good look to yourself. And that was impressive. That was impressive. It was delivered about as respectfully as it could be in that scenario.
It was great strategically and socially.
It was. And I think that is unfortunately going to put a target on her back.
I don't know. I think she might have the ability to blend in a little bit. I know I've said that a lot. That's like the theme of this episode, it seems. But like,
gee, it's almost like it's episode one.
Yeah. But I think the fact that she, like, it was, when you break down that move, it's actually super impressive. Because I'm assuming that she told Carolina that because she wanted to work with her. But then the vote against Carolina is everyone. Like, she does not die on the hill of, like, I'm going to try to keep Carolina around. So in order, like, she set Carolina up to succeed and also pulled the ripcord when it wasn't going her way. And the ability to do both is quite rare.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited for her.
I wonder
actually.
If she's going to take on any sort of mediation role in that tribe.
I hope not. That is not a good place to be.
Oh yeah, no, but we'll see. We'll see if that was as you say, a very tactical move. Or if it was her instinctively speaking her mind and she just happens to be very good at that.
True, yeah. I think the best players are the ones that can do both. That it is that they use the things that they naturally lean towards as a tactical advantage, or at least use it tactfully inside of the game and not just their default when they're not in it.
Hmm.
Yeah. What'd you find on Taj?
Well, Taj was a singer in the girl group Sisters with Voice.
Okay.
SWV for short, and has Grammys. So
shit.
Her group sold over 6 million records. Her time in as a singer has prepared her for the spotlight. Also, she is married to a former NFL player, Eddie George.
Huh.
Wild.
Who is the current head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons.
Okay. Huh. So they're doing good for themselves.
Yeah.
They're fine. Regardless of how this game goes, they're fine.
She did this for fun.
Yeah.
Great. I can't believe this is some people's definition of fun.
Great. Then that's everyone. We have covered our bingo square of Survivor players here.
16 contestants this season.
Yeah, 16 contestants. Not a full load of 20 that we've seen in some of these returning seasons, but
that'd be too many for a first impression on these people.
I agree. So let's quick run through the episode here now that we have everybody laid out in front of us. One, Jeff, once they finished their little trip in this truck, that was actually, I thought that they were doing some like Easter egg situation with the names at the back of the truck, because the first one in the bottom right was Tina.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Huh. But then the others were just, I think they were just his kids' names or something.
Oh, sure.
And there was a website for Derisia.com. Do I dare click it?
Yeah.
I'm going to click
obviously.
It. Yeah. Jared, take over. Talk about Jeff and the introduction.
It's just always funny because it's like, yeah, that's obviously dubbed over. But he's saying all that stuff too. So all the contestants are just sitting behind him while he's like, these 8 or 16 strangers are all blah, blah, blah. And it's like, they're just sitting there having to listen to him and they cannot talk. And they just all look so unhappy to be in that truck.
I wonder how early they had to be up to get in that truck and drive to location.
Probably early, if they knew that they had a 4-hour hike on their hands.
Yeah.
And they traveled for several days before that, he said. It was like a 3-day trip or something.
Yeah, gross. Derisia.com does not exist anymore.
Oh, damn.
I don't know why I expected anything else.
It's the Arrested Development meme of opening the bag. I don't know what I expected.
The truck is loaded with supplies. Jeff tells them you have 60 seconds to grab stuff, get to your mat, and then that's what you're going to carry with you on your hike here. Ready, go.
That's insane.
That was a wild start.
Because, like, we've seen that before, but it's always, like, on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're throwing the stuff into the water or whatever and then jumping down to grab it. It feels so much more, like, brutal in a truck where they can just continue to fight over stuff.
I can punch you and then I can go back around and punch you again.
I will say, to their credit, like, there isn't a lot of, like, actually trying to force things out of people's hands or anything. No. But it's such a limited amount of stuff in such a limited amount of time that it's... I don't know. There's just something about it that was like, this is not as effective as when it's on a boat.
There are also two very distinct strategies of the black team saying, hey, we're going to get these long-term items, the water, the beans, the some of these long poles so we can carry them all, versus the red tribe, our jalapeno tribe, saying, let me just grab all the big things in front of me, like these watermelons.
Somebody dropped a fucking watermelon off the side of the bus and it shattered.
I don't know what you thought was going to happen. That was very clearly the number one option for drop watermelon out of truck.
And yet you should still take the crushed watermelon.
They did. They carried that thing around like a baby.
So I have a question about the water situation.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because as Jeff says, it's 110 degrees. I just really want to hit that again. So they give them some water here in the containers, if they take it, which I think one tribe doesn't.
Correct. One tribe got all the water.
Yeah. And they don't give them fire to start either.
Correct.
And they don't have a well. So what were they supposed to do for 3 days until they got fire? And the answer seems to be just drink straight from the river.
Yeah.
That's not great.
Yeah. Tyson was just filling his, like, the canteen up in the river.
Yeah, they filled the big one. I don't know if they actually drank from that water, because...
Tyson filled his individual, like, canteen up with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't see that, but...
Have we learned nothing from Bruce having so... Ethan, there was a guy on a season that got medevaced because he was like, no, you can just drink the water. It's fine. Or like, no, you can eat raw fish. It's all good.
It was not all good.
The thing that evacuated him was his bowels were so compacted.
Why do you think his bowels were so compacted? Because he kept eating raw fish and drinking toxic water.
Raw fish.
And I'm like, oh, we're just, okay, just start everyone off with a horrible, like, dysentery plague or something.
Cool. By the way, we're now going to vote someone from walking with you on this vote, or on this trek across the... I don't even, the Highlands?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It was couched specifically as, now we're going to take a vote.
Yes.
There was no context until after the vote, which made it such a fucking rug pull.
Well, and there has been a season that they voted somebody off immediately. Mm-hmm. Or one person from each tribe, or I think just two people in general. They weren't split into tribes yet. Immediately, and those people just went home. If I would have caught on, it was only 16, I wouldn't have thought anybody was going home. But they had me for a second where I was like, I don't think they're going to do this, but they could.
It'd be real shitty to bring them all the way to Brazil, have them on a truck for a little bit, and then get out of the truck and say, okay, now you're done.
Yeah. I did think for a second that those two were going to become captains and pick new tribes.
Oh, sure.
That, like, oh, this was a fake out. These aren't your tribes. You just voted for captains that are now going to pick from whoever.
Because as we saw in Gabon, picking tribes always goes really well.
And as we've seen from Gabon, Survivor definitely learns its lessons.
Oh, boy. Okay, anyway. Both Sandy and Sierra are picked as the, all right, we're voting you out. But really, that just means you get a helicopter ride to your camp and you don't have to make this walk. Honestly, best case scenario for Sierra.
Oh, yeah. Sierra would not have survived that trek.
Worst case scenario for Sandy.
Yeah, well, maybe best case scenario for Sandy, actually. I don't know that she stays in the game if this tribe has to put up with her for 4+ hours on that trek. Like, of picking petty fights about which direction they're going and who knows what else. Like, it seems like the less that she's around them, the better off she is.
And she gets so excited about this, too. She's like, yes, yes. And I'm like, maybe don't rub it in your tribesmate's face when they haven't even done the thing that they're forced to do now.
Yeah. I agree. Sandy's not here to win Survivor. She might think she is. Sandy's here to destroy her enemies. Who are her enemies? Anybody that annoys her at any point.
Yeah. So then they take their treks. They wander for a while. There's some navigation issues, but not even, because both tribes make it within a decent amount of time.
One does arrive before nightfall, though.
Yeah. Jalapa arrives before nighttime. Timbira gets there as it's getting dark, so cutting it a little close. Or no, did I do that backwards? No, I didn't. Cause
no, yeah.
It was...
the black tribe gets there at night.
Sierra's the one who made the nice little shelter for them. Like, I made a shelter for 8 people. Great.
Which, I would like to point out, Sierra built the shelter with strep throat by herself, being somebody that's not, you know, a huge physical threat anyway. Built an entire shelter by herself in the course of, like, between, like, 4 and 8 hours, let's say. Mm-hmm. We have seen tribes that do not get a shelter for several days.
And let's be clear, it's a quick shelter. It's not it's to get through the day.
But it's not something. The fucking Ritz-Carlton, but it works.
It's something. Something.
Yeah, that's all you really need. And she says, first impressions are everlasting. If I don't redeem myself, I'll be in the doghouse forever with this tribe. Versus what Sandy does, where it's like, nah, fuck these people. I'm going to go look for this idol right now.
I don't want to win every vote. I want to pull the wool over their eyes for one vote, which is all this immunity idol will help her do.
Yeah. And Sandy, so funny, when her tribe arrives finally, and she's like sitting in a confessional, she hides her note in her bra and does the old, do they look even?
So funny.
Hey, the world, does it look like I have a note stuffed in my bra?
You know that she was like, a groupie for, like, touring bands in the 60s.
She
like,
was
she's
the
lived
driver.
An interesting life. Yeah, well, yeah, it's maybe true. The driver.
Driving
yeah.
around these bands.
She drove Motley Crue, I'd believe it.
We get a little bit of introduction to Timbira here. We ask Jerry what he does to stay in shape. Jerry says, eat potato chips. No, I'm just kidding. I go to the gym, I swear.
definitely not the army. Who said the army?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely not a tour of Afghanistan.
Jesus. Oh, I remembered another reason why I hate Coach. And they will probably keep popping up through the season. I wrote down one of his quotes. Vaguely. It was long, so I am paraphrasing a bit here.
Is it the ancestor one?
Uh-huh. Yep. Whether it be American Indian...
The Norse Viking.
The Norse Vikings. The other one I can't
the samurai.
Read. Samurai. That's what it is. They worked to be... the best, or to be no. beaten by the best.
I have the exact quote.
Okay, great.
Whether it be the American Indian or the Norse Viking, the samurai, they prayed for an opponent that was worthy enough to defeat them.
Yes. Which, on top of being, like, weirdly, like, cultural appropriation and all of that, isn't true. Like, it's the myth of those quote-unquote warrior cultures that is, like, fetishized, especially in Western media, but isn't actually true for the most part.
Are you telling me you don't think that Coach is sitting there with like 6 samurai swords hanging on his wall right now?
No, I think he 100%
that is his definition,
like,
of ancestry.
I went on ancestry.com. It told me 404 error not found, so I have no history. The world is my ancestor.
It said check network diagnostics. Yeah, like, obviously, like, every culture has a ton of, like, nuance to it, but, like, a lot of the Bushido stuff of the samurai times is, like, was from, like, decades after they were actually, like, around, and a lot of them were just, like, thugs and goons, and, like, it's crazy. It's so crazy to me. This kind of guy I hate so much.
Carolina talks about when they arrived to Jalapao that Sandy didn't do anything. We just finished this whole walk, and now we have to set up a camp. Great.
And Sandy being so bitter actually kind of helps her out here, because they don't think she was looking for an idol or something. They're just like, oh, she's a bitter old lady that didn't want to help us.
She just sat in a log for a few hours and waited for us out of spite.
To be fair, I don't think they need to rush on trying to find that idol before she does.
No.
And to be fair, context given, they've never given a clue like that for an idol this early in the game. Usually you have to be sent to Exile Island or have something like fall in your lap for you to get a clue.
Which, I mean, it would be quite a stretch to think of it, but like, this is something falling in their lap.
Yeah.
Like, this is a twist in the game that I think moving forward, whenever anybody's isolated from the tribe for a long period of time, people are going to start thinking that they're looking for an idol no matter when it is in the game.
Mm-hmm. That assumes now she finds the idol. Like that assumes that she finds the idol.
That's true.
Well, you don't need to find it. You just need your tribe to be concerned that you're going to find it. That's actually a really bad spot to be if you can't find it.
Carolina talks about how it's hard for me to keep my opinions quiet. I just say the things that I'm thinking, and that never gets anyone in trouble in Survivor.
Nope.
Ooh. Oops.
It's foreshadowing.
Where did Sandy go?
Also, Carolina kind of sounds like Michaela a little bit.
I was thinking the same thing while watching. It's the high, a little bit squeaky voice.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about, like, in personality, and I was like, are we saying this on mic, y'all?
No. Michaela's very different.
Oh, nice.
The world knows who Michaela is. Or at least these listeners do.
This is the world.
This is the world. At Timbira, Tyson's going naked. This is where we say, I'm not the stereotypical Mormon. I want the $1 million. I want exotic, expensive furs on my shoulders, jewels on my fingers. I'll wear a tiara.
Man tiara.
A man tiara. Do they make those? I mean, you put it on your head, it's a man tiara, sure.
I think it's just called a crown.
I think it's just called a tiara.
Well, yeah, that's fair, too. If Tyson wins this season, that would mean, you know, if I had a nickel for every Mormon winner of Survivor in the last five seasons, I'd have two nickels, which isn't a lot, but it's weird that it happened twice.
Remind me, who was the other Mormon?
Todd.
That's right. Yeah.
Not a large chunk of the population, but would be a much larger percentage of Survivor winners.
Quite impressive, really. All right. Then we have an immunity challenge. You have to race across sand hills, or six of you have to race across sand hills. The final two just sit and wait for the puzzle planks. Once they run across the sand hills, run out into this water, untie these planks from a raft, bring it back to shore, carry them back over the sand hills, and then hand off to the two people to solve a puzzle stairs. And then finally, two people, could be anyone, get to solve a puzzle floating maze.
Yeah.
This is where I knew JT was doomed.
Say more.
Like, Jesus Christ, that man was ahead of not just his own tribe, but everybody on the other tribe flying over those sandhills. That man got such an early lead. And then he screwed himself even more in my eyes, because he had a very clear sense of fair play when he got to that floating raft with the stair planks. He just waited very calmly, very patiently for everybody he needed, and then they went. He didn't try to. He didn't try to get a little advantage. He didn't try to get a little lead. He was very clearly going by the rules, by the book. That man's gonna die.
What would Jeff? I guess just yell at people and tell them to stop, right? Like if he tried to untie it before.
I mean, if they're blatantly disobeying Jeff, then he's gonna stop the challenge and either like punish them or make them run it again.
Yeah.
Ugh. I can't imagine doing it a second time.
I think JT can.
JT could. Some of the others, maybe not so much.
Some of them didn't even do it once.
What are your guys' impressions on the idol?
It's rough.
I'm not a fan of this idol.
Me either. It looks like one of those stretch doll things that you squeeze.
Like a Stretch Armstrong?
Yes. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Yes, a Stretch Armstrong.
It looks somewhere between Stretch Armstrong and a statue of the Buddha.
And this is where we find out, like, somebody writes in after this comes out and goes, actually, this is the local people, nomadic peoples that live here. Like, they coordinate with them, and it's actually something very important to them.
And I'm not even, I'm not even ragging on it for the cultural appropriation aspect of it. Because it's not, like, horribly offensive. It's just pretty lackluster.
Yeah.
It's not that exciting.
Yeah, it's a pretty basic
It looks
section.
Like a first draft.
We could have done better. At first glance, I thought it was carved out of a gourd.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just because of the way the face was shaped.
Yeah. Stretch Armstrong, the immunity idol.
Yeah. So yeah, they're playing this for Flint and immunity. We're pretty neck and neck for most of this first section. On the way back is where Tibira starts to pull away. And it's just a lot of back and forth in this challenge. Because who was it? Carolina and Sydney were the ones who were really struggling to get over those dunes the second time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sierra and Sandy are the ones like running the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like at the end with the stair puzzle.
They're doing the puzzles. And Sierra, while she does not panic and she's playing, she does a good job enough to keep her tribe in it. She's moving very slow.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, Jeff's complimenting her. She's not panicking, but I'm like, but she is in a race, you see.
I don't know. I like the slow and steady approach. Like, on a puzzle, sure. Specifically.
So, the Jalapau gets up to the top rope before Timbira, but Timbira, way better at maneuvering the floating wand puzzle thing. It's... I don't know that I would enjoy doing that. Because it seems reliant on the other person to move with you and, like, to have a good connection.
The three-legged race of puzzles.
Yeah, but you're only a day and a half in. Like, you don't know these people.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, Timbira wins, and we're sending... by all means, everyone's like, this is a slam dunk. We're sending... What's her name?
Sandy.
Sandy's going to go. Or will she?
But then we get, I don't remember who it was, but we got a confessional of somebody being like, but she did really well in the challenge, though.
It was Sydney. I don't want to vote for Sandy, but I don't know who else to vote for at this point. Oops.
Oops. Yeah. Oh, I also want to point out Sierra's dress too short. We have another Blurmanda already. So that'll be fun for the editors for as long as Sierra's on the show.
It's quite a few blurs, and next episode seems like even worse for the blurs.
Oh, yeah. Hey, with fucking...
wear shorts if you're going on Survivor.
Shorts, a sports bra, you know.
That is the craziest one to me, because there's always somebody every season that is wearing something that makes it difficult for them in challenges. Like... I'm like, you know you're coming on the show.
I think production kind of nudges them in a certain direction, as we've heard before.
That's fair.
You give them options, and they're like, this one.
Yeah. And not to say anything about, like, I don't know, I don't want to be weird about it, but it is a limitation in the challenges. Like, it makes their job harder.
It does. So we get back to camp, and Carolina immediately starts pushing, hey, we should finish projects. Like, girl... give us a moment to revel in the fact that we just lost this challenge. And Taj calls her out at
this point.
Revel's
the word you wanted there.
To be sad about it.
Sadly, right.
To celebrate that we lost the challenge.
We did terrible. Woo! Anyway, Taj is saying, hey, that's not going to help in challenges. You panic and get whiny sometimes. I'm telling you this so you can be aware. Carolina's like, oh, yeah, I know. I should check myself. Too late.
Too late. She's already wrecked herself.
Yep.
She has already wrecked herself.
Yeah.
Spencer talks about how he doesn't think Sandy should go because she did really well in the challenge. And Joe is the one who starts floating Kara. He says Caroline, but...
yeah, Ethan and I, we talked about that when we were watching the episode. Like, is it Caroline or is it Carolina? Because he just keeps confidently saying Caroline. Yeah.
Clearly, I think these people know each other very well.
Yeah. But also, as we've discussed before, you can't really ask them what their name is and how to spell it.
Yep.
Hey, not related to tribal that we're going to in a few hours, but how do you spell your name?
Sandy, baby.
Well, and that's actually something we didn't talk about with the vote right in the beginning. None of them were allowed to talk before it, so nobody knew anybody's names. So they had to write down based on, like, girl in the striped shirt.
Which was... also ridiculous. Weird because somebody knew Sierra's name.
True. Yeah, that was weird.
No idea how. My notes just say Ruffle Top because I didn't know her name at that point either. But as a Ruffle Top knew Sierra's name, how?
Hmm. Yeah. Any thoughts before we go to Tribal?
Nah, I got nothing. We're caught up.
Yeah, all right. We covered most of it.
Cool. Then we get to Tribal. Sandy tries to defend herself a little bit. I've got heart in this game, and I want to stay in this game. I believe in myself, yeah? JT says, hopefully she was doing something at camp, is what we were thinking while we were walking, but she didn't. And Sydney says she went off on her own quite a bit. Really, this Tribal's all about Sandy.
Yeah. And actually, I'm sorry, I did miss something from before. Did Carolina ask tell Sandy directly to her face that she was going home? I couldn't tell if it was saying so sorry you have to go, or if there wasn't something I missed in the conversation. That's bold.
If it wasn't stated, I think the tone implied it.
I think it was more along the lines of, I'm voting for you because I don't know who else to vote for at this point.
And fucking wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. And little does she know, it's just because she's completely out of the loop and people are telling her, vote Sandy, because that's the obvious move, right? Well.
Oop.
So, Sandy just kind of keeps talking. I'm an old lady no matter what, but I could still fit into this tribe of kids that could be my kids. Jeff asks, are you a little crazy? Sandy says, I'm a lot crazy.
I agree.
Good. And then Carolina kind of talks a little bit about how I was boisterous. I was maybe a little too loud, but I've learned I'll be better. But it's too late.
Yeah.
Because Carolina is voted out in a 7-1 sweep.
Yep.
She gone.
This tribal did make me realize that I want a season full of Sandys. One season. I don't want it to be the norm, but I want one season where they're like, all right, cast 16 of the craziest fucking people we've had submit audition tapes.
Fair. How do you think Carolina does in Future Survivor?
I mean, again, can't do worse than getting booted up first.
It's true.
So there's at least that. That is... Besides things that you can't control, like being an older contestant that might be physically weaker and gets voted out for that reason, there is not a worse weakness to have on Survivor than being too outspoken and not knowing when to shut up.
Mm. She at least
I think she's probably... Oh, go ahead,
at least
Ethan.
Seemed open to self-knowledge and self-reflection, so there's hope for her, I'd say. But if she puts her foot in her mouth that fast again, it's going to end up the same way.
Yeah, she seems like somebody that's willing to adjust, but you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. And so after she says something too dumb, she's probably just gone, like she was this time. But I agree, of our first boots, she's probably one of the better ones, because there's not... That is something that, with a little more self-control, isn't a problem.
Okay. Well, like I said, she's not coming back. She was actually a last-minute replacement for this season.
Oh.
Which is kind of fascinating to me.
Well, that sucks for her.
Yeah. Well, interesting that her original spot was filled by someone who is going to be a future contestant. Producers felt that this person would have an edge due to her living close to this area.
Oh.
Previously.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just fascinating.
Huh.
I don't know.
Good on Survivor, because I feel like a lesser produced show, or like one with like less competitive rigor, would cast that person for that reason. Of like, ooh, let's give them an advantage, and like they know the area and they know geography.
Yeah. So, your protagonist of the episode, Jared?
I think it's Sandy.
Yeah, it feels like a Sandy.
Sandy is the...
It's Sandy's world and we're all just living in it.
Yeah. Sandy, now the queen of the Brazilian Highlands.
Please, God, no.
All right.
There are no buses. What will she do?
That's true. Where will we drive the bus? Where will I flirt with these men who want nothing to do with me?
Where we're going, we don't need buses, boys.
And...
She may need an immunity idol, though.
And I guess both Jared and Ethan, who do you think wins this season? I can pull up the list again.
I'm going to let Ethan go first.
Oh, boy. No, this is unfortunate because I still don't remember half these people's names.
That's okay. You don't have
to.
Who
wins this season? I'm gonna go with a swing, and I'm gonna say Tyson wins this season.
Okay.
I He's been making some moves that make me think he's got some of the charisma that he needs to play the game. He seems physically fit enough, but he didn't rock the boat. I think he might go far. I don't know if I want him to go far, but I think he might.
I think I agree with Ethan, actually. Okay. Because the thing that we got from him right away is that his head is in the right place.
Sure.
Like, he is here to win Survivor, and he also knows how to do it. And, like, not say other people aren't here to win, but he came in with a plan that I think is a good plan and is an adaptable plan. And, like, part of that plan for him works because he is so naturally charismatic. So I can see him winning the game. I also think that on his tribe, like, Coach is a great shield. Like, he can put Coach in front of him. You don't even have to be in the same alliance. Like, that is a guy that's going to be a lightning rod for a lot of the bad stuff on the tribe. So I think he's set up to succeed.
Okay. Great. Well, we'll have to find out how that plays out through this season of Survivor Token Sheens.
Beep, 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 beep,
beep, beep, beep, beep, beep.
Woo, 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 woo.
Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Thank you, Jared. More importantly, thank you, Ethan. And a little behind the scenes, Ethan hasn't been able to see us for the last, 5 minutes. So Ethan's just talking to a void.
It's made the experience much more easy. I don't feel like I'm being watched.
You are. Now it's just one of those, windows that they have in police stations that you can't see us, but we can see you.
Yes, the interrogation room.
Ethan, is there anything you're doing, anything you'd like to promote in the world?
Nah, man, I'm promoting life. Keep living, y'all.
Ethan's just
here. Tough
vibing
out there. Do your best.
Yeah.
If you're somebody that hires people for voiceover or voice acting, hire Ethan.
Yes, you can find my website at ethanacarlson.com.
Ethan's got that velvety voice.
He does. If you're making a mod for a video game, you need voice actors. He's your man.
Hell yeah. Jared, anything you'd like to promote?
I've done it a couple times before. I'll do it again. Electric scooters. I fucking love my electric scooter. I bought a new one, and I'm giving Steven my old one. And actually, we told the story on the Patreon episode yesterday, but we saw somebody on a motorcycle get hit yesterday, and I did have nightmares about it yesterday, when I slept last night. So that was fun.
Keep wearing your fucking helmets, y'all. Jesus
Christ. Yeah, that's what I'm promoting. Wear your helmets.
Wear your helmet, please.
Yeah, it was wild. Ethan, I was mid-sentence talking about, the safety gear I was thinking about getting because this new scooter is going to be faster, and pointed at this motorcyclist that was going down Sheridan and was like, yeah, that full face helmet kind of deal, maybe, or that type of jacket. So that, I think I said so that, and then we hear a crunch behind us. I look behind, I go, so if that happens, then I'm not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then we Jesus turned around and was like, hey, are you good? A car just ran into them.
Yeah. They were not good.
Fucking hell.
They were not. They were in a lot of shock.
Yeah.
No kidding. Jesus.
And we were getting yelled at by a random person who, because I took a picture of the license plate, because the bike driver allowed them to go off. They're like, just go. And we're like, I'm going to take this picture just in case, because that was maybe a haste decision.
The bike driver was visibly shaking and was clearly just wanted space. But their bike was fucked up. So they're going to want to talk to that person's insurance probably, and made a bad split second decision. And another driver was like, we've been following them all down to Sheridan. They've been driving like maniacs the whole way. And we're like, cool, thanks, I guess.
That doesn't help us.
Yeah, an older lady was just sitting there yelling at us about it, being like, you did a bad thing. And we're like, okay.
We did?
We
Are
don't
you
agree.
Sure?
With,
Jesus.
Steven and I keep having interesting interactions in the wild when we're together.
That's Chicago, baby.
That's Chicago, baby.
Never a boring day.
Nah. All right.
Not in the city of the stinky onion.
I've never heard that before.
That is...
Chicago is a mispronounced Algonquin word that meant stinky onion.
Oh, yeah. All right. Learned a thing.
Built on a swamp.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like Shrek.
The national mascot of Chicago.
For my co-host Jared and our special guest Ethan, this is Steven.
For my host Ethan and our special guest Steven, this is Jared.
For me, this is Ethan. Myself.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you, Ethan.
No problem. I didn't know what was expected of me in that final moment.
That's kind
of
the
point. No one
ever
does. That's the bit.